Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Good morning. This is Dave Kabikian.
And good morning. This is Jane Marie Schaefer.
Jane Marie and I are two of the partners at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend to talk about estate planning and elder law, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, wills, trusts, how to get care at home so you don't need to go to a facility, whatever type. And we're here to answer your questions if you have any at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. If you think you have a question and you really don't want to talk about it on the radio, we're happy to have you call our office and schedule a consultation with Jane Marie or myself, Debbie, Harry. And you can do that by calling 518-465-7581. And you could always email us as well at info@herzoglaw.com. Jane Marie, what's up? We never see each other. And people think it's like, oh, they're just saying it. No, we never see each other.
No, we don't. We're always in different offices, different places. I see you in the parking lot more often.
Yeah, well, that's just where I like to hang out when I'm not at the office. But besides that, yeah.
You're one of the cool kids who hangs out in the parking lot.
Yeah, we, you know, peek in and see in a conference room. Okay, Jane Marie's here. Mm. Well, what's going on? I know it's been busy. I know I've been busy. I know you've been busy. And everyone really has been kind of running around. What's going on?
So we have been busy. And last week I was at our Alzheimer's walk.
Yeah.
That we were a sponsor of and Catskill.
Yep.
And this weekend there's an Alzheimer's walk in Schenectady.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Bonnie and Sherry from our office.
Very cool.
Very cool team there representing us. So if you want to go to that, the walk starts at 10:30 and it's at Mohawk Harbor in Schenectady.
It might be 35 degrees by then.
It might be.
It'll probably be maybe 50 by then, I think. Ben, any idea?
What time are we walking?
10 o'clock. 2 hours from now.
It could be mid-40s by the time they get going. So but that's why neither one of you are walking, and you sent the other two people out. So
I'll tell you, in a couple weeks, it's up at Adirondack Community College, I believe.
That's right.
Where it'll be 12 degrees.
Where it'll be 12
degrees.
That's
right. It'll be freezing.
Yeah, so purple sweaters at that one. We had purple t-shirts in Albany. So
mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that's very cool.
That's cool. And they're raising a lot of money. If you look online, if you can't make it, you could go online and donate.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, but, you know, it kind of gets looped in. So if someone's kind of gotten diagnosed with this or that, you know, people typically will say, well, they have Alzheimer's or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And more people are having it. I mean, people are living long enough, mm-hmm. I guess, develop is maybe the right way to say it. So it's something that we got to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It's apple picking season. I think I'm going apple picking today.
Oh,
actually.
Nice. Gonna wait till it's warmer, though, right?
Yes, definitely post 1 o'clock. But
don't want to get the little one cold.
No. My daughter just lost her fourth tooth last night.
What is the going rate for teeth these days?
I don't know. Well, the tooth fairy is a very generous tooth fairy these days. I don't think the tooth fairy. I mean, adjusted for inflation, maybe it's the same. I don't know, but.
I think I got a quarter. What about you, Ben?
I think I was a quarter or 50 cents.
Yeah, something like that.
It's probably like $5 now.
I don't know. No comment.
You don't have a direct line to the Tooth Fairy?
Well,
like a white phone or something that you talk to them
with? A white phone
with?
Would make sense. Yes. I like that. Mm-hmm. It's a nice touch.
Yes.
I'm not sure. Maybe if Jackie's listening right now, she'll call and tell you what she got.
But, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
But according to the New York Times, because I just read an article yesterday, it's Medicare season. It's October 15th to December 7th is when you can change your type of enrollment. You can choose between what they call original fee-for-service Medicare and the Advantage program. You could also reevaluate your prescription drug plan. And a number of weeks ago, Harry and I talked about Medicare. We don't do Medicare. We are not Medicare experts. We know that you should think about your different options, and that's as kind of far as we go. But we do know a number of people who do handle that kind of thing. And of what I understand, they actually don't get paid by a consumer. They meet for free and help you enroll in whatever is right for you, and I think they get compensated in a different way. So if you do need help with that, again, you could email us at info@herzoglaw.com. We're happy to share that information. So happy Medicare season.
That's right.
We're not there yet. Quite.
No, not yet. I still have a ways to go.
Yeah.
Even though I'm an AARP member.
Are you really?
Yes.
When do they start sending things out? Well, you don't have to answer that question.
No, 50.
At 50. I was going to say, once you hit 50, I don't have a problem saying that. I'm over 50. So
50.
Yep.
I got the discount on my car insurance, so that's why it was great.
Well, you know what? Brad Pitt's an AARP member then, too.
He's just 50 this month.
Yeah, so there you go. You and Brad Pitt.
We're in good company. I'm in good company.
Yeah. Well, so you were telling me when we walked in about a different New York Times article, or a different article at least, that you
had
found.
Yeah, that's right. I was reading a different article that said 8 reasons you may need to update your will.
Mm.
And, you know, many of us, we did a will. Well, I did mine 19 years ago. I haven't pulled it out and looked at it.
So was that finally after your first son was born? Is that what triggered it?
My first son was born, right.
Very good.
He's turning 20 on Monday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
So, by all means, I should pull out my will and look at it. I know we tell clients every 5 years or when a major life event changes.
Yeah.
But here are some other things to think about. Here are 8 life changes that should prompt people in their 50s and 60s to review their wills to ensure they're still consistent. So the first one is if you've moved to a different state. Now, what we usually tell clients that your will is valid, you know, if it was executed correctly in the state. But things may have changed, laws may have changed. It's going to be important to review the rules in the state that you move to.
Absolutely. So this article, is it literally just talking about wills? Because when I hear wills, just like people hear a form of dementia, they just say Alzheimer's. Or I'm thinking your estate plan, right?
This article is about wills, but you could extend it to other documents as well.
Well, so Jamie, what you said is spot on, right? A valid will that you signed in Arizona is fine in New York. The rules of how things will be administered is New York rules. But the will itself, who gets what, could be valid. But the power of attorney, healthcare proxy, absolutely. If you move states, you have to update those documents. I mean, technically, I guess you don't have to do anything, but you really, 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 really should, because the whole point is for your power of attorney to work and not take 4 to 8 business days for some attorney at a bank to review it.
Well, we have a hard enough time with banks and New York powers of attorney sometimes.
Yeah, oh my. I have something on that one after this article. For sure.
Okay. So you definitely want to have a power of attorney that's valid in your state so everyone recognizes it. And same thing for your healthcare proxy.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. So number 2 on this list, and this is interesting. I don't think, well, sometimes we do this in our wills. In your will, you could say, I leave my home located at 123 Main Street to my daughter. So now what if you've sold your home? And you've bought another home.
Yep.
You still want your home to go to your daughter, but it has the wrong address.
Well, so let's blow this out. Let's say you did have, Jane Marie happens to live at 123 Main Street, by the way. It was a coincidence.
Isn't that a coincidence?
And Jane Marie leaves it to one of her sons. Mm-hmm. What's your oldest
name?
Sean. You leave it to Sean.
Right.
And then years go by, and you and Mike, your husband, you decide to downsize, and you don't even own any home. You're renting an apartment, and you have a couple hundred grand more of assets because of it.
Right.
Depending on how the will reads, that means that Sean gets zero because that house doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Or you could word it in a way where he gets the value that house represented, perhaps.
That's right.
You may actually, you know, have, because it's now an asset that is more liquid, you can may have beneficiaries on a brokerage account that's holding that money. So there's a lot of thinking to do. And you may say, hey, I just bought my forever home. I'm not moving ever. Okay, that's fine. We're going to act as if you might in your documents.
You have to, because you never know what's going to happen.
And I think also what we tend to do as attorneys is to not be as specific on some of those assets.
I think it's better if you just say my principal residence, right? Because as this shows, you would have to come back in and update it.
Mm-hmm.
And or things may not go the way you want them to. So, all right. Now, and this is kind of along those lines. Some people put in their wills that, you know, my wedding ring is going to this person. Well, that's not, and then maybe you get divorced and you threw that wedding ring out or something. Mm. So personal possessions.
Or a watch or whatever.
Or a watch or my grandmother's antique desk, you know.
So we have a letter, right? We recommend that people sign a letter that they can fill out at their discretion and redo and redo and redo, where they're kind of saying where they'd like things to go. And that's not a will. That's just saying how you'd like things to go. And we do have it get witnessed, but it doesn't have the full force of a will because it didn't get executed the same way. But we'd rather have that than people have that detail in a will and then call us up and say, I need to change my will because I'd like my younger son to get my watch, not my older son. Mm-hmm. That seems like a silly reason to spend some money on a will, on a new will.
That's right, because you could be changing it frequently. Some clients do change their minds frequently on that. So,
now, if it's a really important thing,
yes,
absolutely, this has to happen. This has to. Then we would put it in your will, but we typically like to have that conversation. I'm trying to think back if I could think of any specific items. One that I know it was a file that we both ended up working on was where there was some mosaic art creations dad had been doing, mm-hmm. and the kids really were adamant about who would get what, and I think there was going to be a lottery system.
Still hasn't happened.
Yes. So I think we drafted that mm-hmm. there would be a you know, everyone picks a number and then there's mm-hmm. a priority, and you do kind of like a...
You go first, and you pick the one you want, and...
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, best laid plans, because mm-hmm. even on an estate like that, mm-hmm. if you kind of get the sense as a drafter, if we really need to get into that detail, then maybe...
There's a problem.
There's
in
a
the
problem
family.
Going on, right?
Yeah, and yeah. there is a problem in the family. But that is probably one of the only fair ways to do it, right?
Well, I guess it absolutely. And I guess it's just more to the point that every family is different. Every estate plan is different. There is no cookie cutter. There is in my mind, there is no such thing as an online will that you fill out. That is not.
No. How many of those have we seen wrong?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So another one is you've made a gift to a child. So we've seen this sometimes, you know, a parent makes a gift to one child to help them out, but not the other child. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, do you want to equalize them in your will? Where you could say, I already gave my child $50,000 for a down payment on a house, but my other son didn't get it. So is that fair?
Yeah. Right. We do that a good amount as well. And there's actually a Medicaid client that we have where we're dealing with that. I'll talk about it in a second. We're going to get to Steve in Red Hook here. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Yes, good morning. I was listening to the show, and there was... I'm a little confused, if you can help me out. Within a trust, if you have a house that's at 100 Lane, you know, Rhinebeck or whatever, and then you sell that house and you buy another property, do you have to indicate that into the trust?
So are you saying in terms of who gets what, or just the idea that there's something new in the trust?
Well, you sell the old house and you buy a new house, mm-hmm. and you identify the old house in the trust. Do you have to change that?
I guess so. So the place in the trust where you would identify what's in the trust is a schedule to the trust, and for our documents, it's a Schedule A, and that Schedule A could be updated at any time, and it could be updated by hand, and that reflects what's in the trust. The idea there is to make it really easy for people to understand what's in the trust, what's not in the trust. So let's get into this. You're going to sell 100 Maple Lane in Rhinebeck from the trust. Well, you yourself are not doing it. The trustee of the trust
right.
is doing it.
Yeah.
At your direction, at the cost
yes.
that you agreed to and all that stuff. And at the closing, the deed and the documents that transferred the sale of your current home signed by the trustee, you decide to put a new property in. Well, the question that Jane Ray would have is, did you use trust assets to buy that house, or did you use your own assets? And then, you know, because it's a question of who is buying the new house. Is it...
Say it's a trust asset.
The trust. Okay. Yeah. So now the trust owns that house. Technically, you don't have to even update the schedule to say the trust owns the house. The trust owns the house because the trust owns the house. It just bought it using trust assets. A deed was issued to the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, when Jane Marie's talking about this article in wills, sometimes people will want really important things to be written into their will, which then means that we got to deal with what happens if it's not in their, you know, in their estate anymore, if they don't own it anymore. In the trust landscape, it's a little different, a little easier, because, again, it, you know, what the trust owns is a moving target, and it's as simple as updating a schedule A to it, and even handwriting the new property address or crossing out the old one.
Oh, okay.
So score one for trusts. That's what I, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Of course, a smart thing to do is buy and sell within the trust if you want to protect the home.
That's right. So if the trust you have is a Medicaid trust, we don't want to lose the protections that you've accrued. You know, you have your own house in the trust for 4 years. We don't want that real estate transaction to result in you getting a lot of money back, sometimes incorrectly. So that's one of those moments. You know, Jane Marie talks about, you know, looking at your plan. Big changes are deaths in the family, births in the family, moving around real estate, I would say qualifies, and we always like to hear from our clients so we could make sure you're, you know, if we're not handling the real estate, making sure that the attorney that is knows the ins and outs of what it means to have a trust own that real estate.
Very good. You've answered my question. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Good question.
Very good question. And, you know, it's, we do handle real estate. Just so everyone knows, you know, we focus our attention on the radio to estate planning. Real estate's usually the largest asset aside from maybe a retirement plan.
Right.
And it's the largest protectable asset, I guess you could say. So
I think it's the one most commonly put into a trust for our clients, right?
Well, and yes, and I think it makes doing a trust easier for people to accept and understand, because worst case scenario, which is really our best case scenario for our clients, is you live out your years in paradise and never have a minute of long-term care need, but at least you avoided probate because your property was in your trust. So there's a lot of savings there.
There's more than one benefit to it, right?
Great call.
Okay, that was a good call. If other people want to call in, it's 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590.
Now, their call doesn't have to be as good as that call, because that was a factually a great call. But we'll take mediocre to very good to fantastic calls.
That's right. All right, so moving on. So another reason to update your will, and your charity relationships have changed. Maybe you weren't giving to charity. Maybe you are going to give to charity. I had a client, we came in, and her dad's will had named these charities. She said she didn't even recognize some of them. They weren't ones that he contributed to anymore. And she was, you know, he probably hadn't updated his will in a long time.
And your feelings about charities can change, your feelings about your family members. A lot of times people are giving to charities because they're... Let me see how to say this.
On the outs with their family members?
Well, it could be on the outs. I had someone yesterday in Saratoga who was telling me, well, his wife comes from money, and you know, they'll all be taken care of. And so she was more charitably inclined. And giving to charities are fantastic, don't get me wrong. But sometimes your feelings about your family's financial situation can change. And that means that you're going to give more money to your family and less money to a charity, perhaps.
That's right.
A lot of moving parts there, for sure. We do have another caller, though. We have Carl in North Greenbush. Good morning, Carl. How are you? No pressure, but the last call was a really good call.
I hope this is as good. I was listening, and you talked about power of attorney and healthcare proxy for another state.
Yeah.
And we're snowbirds, so we go to Florida for a bit of time. And do I need to have a healthcare proxy and power of attorney for the state of Florida for the time I'm there?
We do recommend that you do that, and you can have more than one healthcare proxy or power of attorney. So for a lot of the snowbirds, I say they have a Florida one in Florida, right? So the doctors and the banks would be more familiar with it down there. And, you know, your New York one for when you're up here. But, you know, don't be worried if you haven't done that yet. You know, your New York one is still going to be valid in Florida.
Okay. I don't do any banking in Florida, but, you know, we do have, we're 75 years old, so we have some health issues, and we need to have things in place. The healthcare proxies are in the glove compartment of the car, and I just wondered if I needed to have a separate one specifically for the state of Florida.
So I think it's a good idea to do so, as Jane Marie said. My bigger question for you is, do you guys own something in Florida and own something in New York? Because if that's the case, the idea of avoiding probate is really kind of the most important thing, because the only thing worse than a New York probate is to do a New York probate and then do an ancillary one in Florida or vice versa.
We have everything in trust with
Wonderful.
You guys.
That's Very
great.
Good. Well, I like all parts of that. That sounds great.
The properties are in trust. The assets are in trust. So
what I would not do, though, is I would make sure that when you meet with an attorney in Florida, do power of attorney healthcare proxy. If they say, hey, you really should have a Florida will, I kind of disagree. I don't want a will. I want you to have one will.
Okay.
And if it was validly done in New York and it reflects your wishes, the last thing I want is for there to be a document out there that maybe wasn't worded the same way in Florida and dated after your will. That could lead to a lot of problems if somehow some asset fell through and was subject to probate.
Okay, understand. Thank you. I worked everything through you, so I'm assuming that the will and the, you know, the trust and everything are in excellent shape.
Yeah, well, should be. Well, we just come in every now and then, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, good.
I haven't been in a while. I think we're approaching our... I think we're past our 5-year look back.
Well, we should throw a party because you've saved a bunch of assets.
Right.
That's fantastic.
And it may be a good time just to review everything.
Right. I'm sorry?
It could be a good time just to review everything and make sure everything's the same.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, great.
Thanks for the call,
much.
Carl.
Okay. Have a good day.
Good.
So two fantastic
calls.
That
was calls a great call also.
But back to back. Now the heat's really on caller number three.
Oh, come on. No pressure. No pressure.
Jamie, before you get... back to the article, I think we're on number 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to mention that we do have seminars coming up in October. The topic is one of the more popular ones, wills versus trusts. We kind of do a deeper dive into why Carl should have a trust as opposed to a will, and what it means to, even though a will is something that everyone should have, many people actually should have their assets passed through a trust. And we talk about the pros and cons, and some of it's, you know, just avoiding probate or dealing with modern families, and a lot of it's dealing with Medicaid. On Tuesday, October 22nd, so that's only a couple of weeks from now, at 2 p.m. we'll be in Clifton Park at the Hampton Inn at 620 Plank Road. On Wednesday, October 23rd, the next day at 2 p.m., we'll be at the Staybridge Suites, 39 Wolf Road in Albany. That's right next to Macy's in the Colony Center parking lot. On Thursday, October 24th at 6:30 p.m., we're going to be, I skipped over the 10 o'clock one. At 10 o'clock on Thursday the 24th, we'll be at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia. They redid it. It's beautiful. The cookies are fantastic.
They're even better than before. Right?
It's hard to imagine, but I agree. And then that evening at 6:30 p.m. at East Greenbush, that's Thursday, October 24th, again, 6:30 p.m., we'll be at the Holiday Inn Express in East Greenbush. That's 8 Empire Drive. And then we have one out in November. We'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. Great way to get more information. I always am a larger proponent of coming in for a consultation, but if you think that's an intimidating setting, coming to a seminar with, you know, a bunch of other people there, good cookies, sounds good.
Yeah, you're very intimidating.
If you want a seat at the seminar, you could call at 518-465-7581 or email us at info@herzoglaw.com. I've been called a lot of things.
Not intimidating.
It's not one of them. So back to your article, Jamie. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Sure. So we're up to number 6 now.
Okay.
Another time to change your will is... your financial situation or the value of your assets have changed. And this could come up in a couple different ways. For example, you could be leaving specific bequests. You could be leaving, you know, $10,000 to each grandchild or $50,000 mm-hmm. to each grandchild. And the problem with doing specific bequests is, you know, then the balance goes to your children.
Mm-hmm.
That could either take up, right, a good portion of your estate if your assets went down in value, or it could, or you may be able to give more if your assets went up in value.
So I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So someone says, I'm going to give $5,000 to each grandchild,
mm-hmm.
and that their estate ends up being $50,000 or $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they were thinking that they were going to be giving their kids a lot more money than their grandkids, but the way the math shakes out,
right.
I see. Interesting. Well, you know, we're going to, after the article is done, we're going to, and after the break, we're going to start talking to you guys about why wills aren't the right way to move your assets.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, because, you know, you have retirement assets or brokerage accounts and other types of assets that can have beneficiaries, and maybe you'll make up for it, but be careful. And the other thing is with back to charities, and this, you know, sometimes people give a percentage to a charity
mm-hmm.
when they don't know when they're going to die and what they're going to have. And as opposed to a dollar amount. And that can become a colossal pain in the neck.
Right.
Because you may be giving more or less than you thought you were giving. But more importantly, the administration of that estate, where a charity financially will get, you know, an extra cent or two for every dollar that's administered the right way, they're going to have a magnifying glass on the estate administration. And they do that through the New York State Attorney General's office. So if that doesn't sound like an appealing experience, you really want to be careful about percentages to charities.
That's right, because you need Attorney General approval for bequests to charities. So they're going to look at all of your expenses of the estate. So there are other better ways to leave money to charity.
Very cool. Ben's telling me we have time for number seven.
We do have time for number seven. All right. So number seven is, oh, okay, this is an interesting one. Your child has become your primary caregiver.
Oh, okay. So what's their angle here?
So do you want to, so the angle is you may want to update your document to reflect your gratitude to your family caregiver.
Oh, okay. Well, so that's into your, you know, just basic, I would think basic, you know, meat and potatoes estate planning. Who gets what?
Who gets what?
And it could be based off of a lot of different factors.
But, and we often do see the caregiver child get more money or the house or something special for all the work that they've done.
I can't wait to hear number eight, but we're going to have to hear it in a couple minutes. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning. This is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. This is Jay Marie Schaefer.
Jay Marie and I are... Everything okay over there, Jay Marie?
I think she was getting ready for number eight, and she just kind of lost her train of thought there.
I forgot my name for a moment there.
Wait, hello?
Well, we have a suspenseful, we had a very suspenseful break there.
I can't wait. I was hoping she'd tell us during the break, but she's going to wait.
No, I'm leaving the suspense open here. Okay.
Well, so the suspense is about number eight, and what number eight represents is the eighth reason to think about updating your estate, specifically your will. But before we hear that, just to get it, you know, a little more suspenseful, we are here every weekend talking estate planning, elder law, everything from wills and trusts to really complex Medicaid planning. Our goal is whatever your goal is. It's not like we're selling product or anything like that. It's simply informing you guys of your different options every family is different. Every family tree is different. So do yourself a favor and come to a seminar or come for a consultation if you need more information about your fact pattern. January number 8.
So number 8 is one of your beneficiaries has gotten married or got divorced. So if it's your child, let's say they've gotten married. This brings up a question I get a lot of times. Is my son-in-law or daughter-in-law going to get anything out of my estate?
Okay.
And so, we spend a lot of time talking about this. Some people love their sons-in-law, right?
Like my mother and father-in-law.
I'm sure your mother and father-in-law love you, right?
Yes.
Or some people absolutely hate their daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
No,
that's not the case.
Thinking of my mother-in-law.
Not the case.
No.
Be nice.
No, we got along great after a while. But
well, so okay, let's parcel this, and I'm really happy this was number 8. 8, I feel like was worth the it delivered in my opinion. So we say in our documents typically that assets will pass to your issue if you want it to go evenly to your children.
Purse-terpes. A lot of people say, what the heck does purse-terpes mean?
Right? Or your documents will say, I give $10,000 to Jane Marie, or I give one half of my assets to Jane Marie, and if she predeceases to Jane Marie's issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what the word issue means is blood. It's following your bloodline. It's following the tree branch, Jane Marie's tree branch. So we continue to her two kids, Sean and
Ryan.
And her tree branch, even though, you know, it's spending significant time with husband, her tree branch doesn't include spouse. So for purposes of who gets what, it's not going to go to Jane Marie's husband if she predeceased mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
However, if Jane Marie survives mom and dad, and our plan is for Jane Marie to survive mom and dad, our plan is for every child to survive their parents. That's what we want.
Right.
What Jane Marie does with her will, with her estate plan, is up to Jane Marie. And so if Jane Marie says, I give everything to my husband and then to our kids, because that's what Jane Marie would do in a normal situation, well, that means that if Jane Marie dies within blank amount of time of mom and dad, it could be son-in-law that they don't like. I'm sure they like. He's a great guy. it may be son-in-law gets everything. It may be son-in-law remarries and doesn't have a good relationship with his kids anymore. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and the parents could hate him and not want him to get anything.
Yeah. Right? So the question becomes, how bad do you want to control the situation from the grave? Because you can control it. That's the good news. We could... Unless it's against public policy, essentially, we could do anything you want. We could create the language for whatever it is you want and deal with your worst fears.
So in theory, my parents could set up something so that Michael never sees the money.
Right. They could
How would they do that?
They would leave Jane Marie's share in trust for her. Maybe Jane Marie's the income beneficiary, and there are a couple provisions to break in case of emergency to provide you with money. But upon your death, money goes to your kids, Sean and Ryan, so the grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
It's more drafting. It's a more involved plan. We can do it. It's not a problem. But you need to know that there can be a lot of complications that rise from that. And a lot of, you know, you want to provide for your daughter. And you want to make sure that she has everything that she needs. Mm-hmm. And she may not have everything she needs if you word things that way. At some point you should relinquish control when you're no longer here to your comfort level. So it's a lot of moving parts. I mean, I feel like we could spend the rest of the hour talking about it, and maybe we will.
There's a lot of ways to draft that, right?
Yeah. If you don't want to hear us talking about it though, you can easily call at 518-476-5900 and tell us or ask us about something else and we'll stop talking about it. But this is life. Like, these are the relationships that matter, and your estate plan is personal to you and your spouse or your partner. And so whatever you guys decide to do, it's doable. But there's a downside to everything as well.
Right. Everyone's situation is different, but there's usually a way to accommodate you, right? To get your needs down on paper so it can accommodate you. And we do spend a lot of time talking to clients about family relationships and where money would go afterwards.
So another scenario, Jamie, is I'm gonna leave it to my daughter, but I really don't want him to get it if they get a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where just a little bit of education and conversations could really help, because an inheritance, as well as a gift, is considered separate property when it comes to a marital divorce in terms of what property gets divided. Now, if someone inherits $10 million, that can be a factor in other things, such as child support and how we split the other kinds of assets. But if you're really worried, you got to talk to your kid and say, hey, look, we're going to give you this stuff, but you keep it in a separate account, and you always keep it in a separate account. Mm-hmm. And you think long and hard before you're spending it on marital things, because this is how we feel. We respect your decision to marry so-and-so, mm-hmm. but we don't like it. There are things we could have done about it, but we'd prefer for you to get all the money outright, but we have instructions.
Right.
And this is kind of, I think, in the category of that gift letter, where it means something, but it doesn't really mean anything if they don't act in accordance with your instructions.
That's true. If you're not putting it in a trust, you can't control it, but you can express what your wishes are.
And it's so weird to hear you say that, Jamie, because most people think when they do a trust, they lose control. Mm-hmm. And we're saying that that's the exact opposite. You could actually use trust to control it for decades beyond you being here. That's how much control the trust still gives you.
You could control it for down to your grandchildren's lives, right? Well, we often do that for grandchildren who are minors. We don't want them to get the money when they turn 18. So a common thing that we have in our trust is a certain age that the grandchildren could get the money, so it stays in trust for them until they're more mature.
Marriage and divorce certainly are a time where we will want a word with you just to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And if we did things right the first time around, there's nothing to really see here. Now, I have clients, I know you have clients, I know Harry and Debbie have, because we've talked about it before on the radio. People love their in-laws so much, this is the other side of the spectrum, that their backup trustee, sometimes their trustee is their son-in-law, because he's good with numbers and this and that, and you know, she would be too overwhelmed. And so if there's a divorce of them, you don't want your ex-son-in-law as
right.
trustee.
That's right. So we've put language in there also. You know, it is my son-in-law if he's still married to my daughter, for example, or things like that.
Absolutely. So we're done with
so
we did
done
eight.
With that long and exciting list. That's
so
right.
I think I have a couple additional things, and this is more your estate plan stuff. So from time to time, there'll be legislation that might pass where the rules change, which means it's time, if you don't have a trust, it's time to come in and do it real quickly. And fund it to get in. That's a big one in my mind. Changing your documents when there is a bad diagnosis or something like that.
That's right.
We've talked about the scenario. It's unfortunately real. We have, you know, clients of ours, longtime clients. They fund their trust with most of their assets, but leave out
a certain comfortable
amount. They don't see us for about 20 years, and that comfortable amount grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. So now it's a large amount of money that's not in the trust, not protected. And they come to see us because they can't take care of mom anymore in the house. And we say, when did you start taking care of her? Why, you know, why didn't you come in 5 years ago when the diagnosis happened? Because then we would have said, hey, put that money that's not in the trust, throw it in there. Let's get that clock ticking. And unfortunately, we ran out of time. They didn't have the time to protect it. And guess what? As mom got older and developed dementia, dad happened to get older too, right? People age every day, right?
They both are going to need care.
I'm looking at Ben age in place right here, right now.
That's right. I'm aging as we speak.
That's right.
So,
But the point is, if they picked up the phone 5 years earlier, right? This is now 15 years after they did their original documents. They didn't see a need to do anything. But the wife gets diagnosed with dementia. You have to come in and change your documents or get a review.
That's right.
It might be change nothing or add 20 bucks to your trust or take money out. I don't know. We could have explained to them that the 5 years that they were caring for mom, they could have been compensated for it, or Medicaid could have had programs that could have helped keep her at home longer. We cannot help clients with the things that we are not informed about.
Yeah,
know, that you don't tell us about? I mean, like, you know, there's lots of exemptions when it comes to Medicaid, when it comes to applications. There's a lot of nuance to it, and you know, we ask questions that other people wouldn't, because we know that if you happen to have a kid that's been freeloading in your basement for the last 2 years, well, I think he was taking care of you for 2 years, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And we might be able to save a house because of a child caretaker rule.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's a disability in the family, we might be able to take advantage of moving assets around. So we only know that if you tell us that stuff. And so sometimes we have some difficult conversations.
Right, but we're not going to know if you don't come in and talk to us. So it's not just you do your trust, you put it on the shelf, and you're done. But you have to, you know, update it. You don't have to pull it out and look at it all the time.
You know, when we say issue in our documents, we're kind of planning for like more grandkids.
Yes.
We're planning on less kids, more grandkids, awful things, great things. If one of those grandkids ends up having special needs, that is a time to update. Even though we did take into account a new grandchild, we need to sprinkle in some language to make sure that if they get money, you know, they'll keep the benefits that they qualify for as well.
The other thing that's important with blended families these days is stepchildren.
Hmm.
Do you want to include your child, your step-grandchildren, right? Because issue only goes by bloodline. So if you want to include them, we have to update your documents to make sure they're included.
It gets complicated. I mean, there was a client that we have now, met with them this week. So the two daughters that they have are just her daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they say these are our daughters, right? If you ask him, do you have any kids? He'd say, yes, I have two.
Right.
We're going to get to John in Queensbury in just a second here, okay? John, hang on just for a second. So she had actually had her first child really young, and she wasn't prepared. And so her child was adopted out.
Mm-hmm.
She rekindled the relationship for decades, but technically it's not her kid based on law.
Right.
So it's pretty heavy for John. John, you got to follow that. John in Queensbury, how are you?
Not too bad. We were told, our broker who handles the IRAs and such said that we should individually list, you know, who the beneficiaries are versus having the estate of or the will determine any distributions. Which is the correct way to do it?
So on your IRA, you're talking.
Right.
So there are a lot of pitfalls. If you name your estate or a trust as a beneficiary of a retirement, you actually can do that in some instances, or it might be a default. But there are a lot of benefits that come from inheriting an IRA, for example. It deals with, you know, when you receive an IRA, you receive it essentially in payout status. You got to start paying taxes on distributions that you're required to take, and those distributions are based on your life expectancy. So I like personally naming people, okay? I think that's the right route to go. If you said, no, it'll go to my estate or it'll go to my trust, if you happen to have a beneficiary of your trust, you know, who's a lot older than another beneficiary, that younger beneficiary under the IRS rules and regulations, they'll be taking their distributions at an elevated level because that older person. So it can get complicated. My easy answer, and Jamie, you tell me what your thoughts are, I just name them individually, personally.
Yes, I agree, because if it goes to your estate, it could even not just be out over your child's lifetime. It could go to the rule where you have to pay it all out in 5 years. So it is better to name the individuals so they can stretch it out. It's better tax-wise for them.
But say, you know, you're the beneficiary of the IRA is one of the children.
Right.
And, you know, you don't especially love you love the child, but you hate the spouse.
Yep.
Grandkids, you're sort of like, when will they ever grow up?
Yes, that's right.
No, why do I want to leave them anything? Whereas in the will, I can change that easier, can I? Or
well, if you are going to make your will, I mean your estate or your trust, the beneficiary of your IRA, you need to have special language in there that deals with retirement plans so you can still get the tax advantages. So you can do that, but you need to review the documents and make sure that language is in there to still give you those tax benefits.
Okay.
Because it's true, you can name, you can have it go through your will and have a trust set up for your grandchildren that can receive the IRA benefits. So you're still going to get good tax advantages, but you're spreading out, you know, the time that the grandchildren can get the money. They're not going to get it all at once.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm. And right to another question. We have Jim from Clifton Park. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Good morning. What's up? I have a question also about trusts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The trustees of that trust or not?
Well, there are trusts where you could be the trustee. Those are called revocable trusts, and there's nothing wrong with that. The primary motivating factor for doing that kind of trust is we want to avoid probate. And we want to deal with some, you know, any family situations, I guess, more complicated family trees. But that kind of trust is not going to protect the assets in the event we have long-term care needs. Okay. With the Medicaid trust, which will help with the protection, you and your spouse cannot be the trustee.
Okay. So that would be irrevocable trust then?
Right. Specifically trust? The Medicaid trust. Yeah.
Okay. Earlier you had a question about selling a house. If we did sell the house and, say, moved into an apartment, does the proceeds from that sale go into the... Does it have to go into the trust, or can it go into the trust to be protected?
So it technically is supposed to go into the trust, but if you said, well, we want to pull $50,000 out from those proceeds, we could easily have a paper signed by all the interested parties to make that happen. Because the trust is selling the property, the proceeds are due to the trust. Well, there's plenty of times at the closing that there's proceeds that go back to you, the individual, because we had the right paperwork signed. It's called a partial revocation to pull out some money from the trust. So the answer is whatever you want, essentially.
Okay, so it doesn't have to go into the trust. But then
you want it to if you want to keep protecting the money.
Protecting the money.
I mean, okay. Worst case, it goes into the trust and then you pull it out. And there's the same way to do that. Now, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
You gave me two. I got one for you. How close are you to 620 Plank Road? Mm-hmm.
620 Plank Road?
Yeah. You're in Clifton Park, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you there October 22nd, 2 p.m. on Tuesday. We're literally going to be talking about wills and trusts, and we're going to do a deep dive on all the different kinds of trusts. And I mean, if your questions are good ones, you should come to the seminar or come see one of us in the office one day.
When is it again?
October 22nd. It's a Tuesday at 2 p.m.
Okay.
If you need me to change the time, I'll change it to 3 p.m. I'm kidding. No, it's 2 p.m. Hampton Inn.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try to be there.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Well, that's like four good calls.
Very good calls.
I don't know what's going on. Maybe the cold weather, people are, they're sharp.
It's the pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice.
That time of the year.
Season. Are you a fan or
Of pumpkin spice?
You either love it or hate it.
I probably don't like it, but, mm-hmm. You know. It's a little overdone. Like it could be a little bit of like one thing that's pumpkin-y, but literally right.
Everything is pumpkin spice
yeah.
Right now.
It's unnecessary.
Till the end of
Are you
I like it. Yes, I do.
You look like a pumpkin spice.
I love
person.
Pumpkin spice. Yeah.
Ben is sometimes. You clearly.
I'm not really into those foo-foo shishi coffee things, so I'm not really a big pumpkin spice guy, but I like pumpkin bread and things like that. Yeah. I make pumpkin pancakes on the weekend.
Okay.
Ooh, that's so, good.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Today's a weekend.
You should have brought them in, Ben.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to do that when you're up at 2:45. So. Okay. Kind of tough to get that together.
Sorry. But Jim, on the 2nd at the Clifton Park Seminar at the Hampton Inn, that's Tuesday, October 22nd
at 3? Didn't you move the time?
Oh, 2 p.m.
Oh, you didn't move the time? It's at 2? Okay.
He can come late. That's fine. All right. 620 Plank Road in Clifton Park. On Wednesday, October 23rd at 2 p.m. we'll be right next to the Colony Center at the Staybridge Suites. It's 39 Wolf Road in Albany. On Thursday, the 24th at 10 a.m., we'll be at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, 1 Glen Avenue in Scotia. And that evening, the 24th of October, 6:30, will be at the East Greenbush Holiday Inn Express. That's 8 Empire Drive. If you listen to us and you say, well, I work and it's tough to get anywhere at 2 p.m. or 10 a.m. or even if you moved it to 3, that 6:30 seminar is a great one to go to. Get your ducks in a row. It's important enough to at least go through one of our seminars and hear it's all facts. Mm-hmm. We're not telling you to do anything other than to get more facts after you go to that seminar, but it's a really good starting point. If you got a relative that's you keep saying you got to do something, you got, mm-hmm. my friend's parents just lost everything and, you know, going through long-term care stuff, get them to come to, they must love cookies.
Everyone
have
loves
them, have
cookies,
them come get
right.
some cookies. We'll get some pumpkin spice cookies.
At that 6:31, yeah. I know they fresh bake them there. Oh. So you walk in, you smell cookies. Yep.
Okay, very good.
In fact, some people come more than once before they decide to do something. So some people are careful researchers, and they may go to 2 seminars.
We have clients who come often.
Right.
Even that's
to
great.
Keep informed after they've done their doctor.
And they still ask fantastic questions, and mm-hmm. they keep learning. They could probably do some of the seminars, actually, a couple of them. So, Jamie, there was a CLE I was involved in this past week. And
that's right. You weren't involved. You were teaching.
Well,
right?
I did one of them, but my reviews weren't very good, apparently. I was fair to good. I wasn't excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right. I had a very tough topic. I was talking about New York State estate taxes, and it's really hard
to
liven that up.
Interesting.
But the topic that I was excited to hear about, the speaker before me, was about powers of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I was relieved and terrified to learn that we're not the only ones that come across really awful powers of attorney mm-hmm. and are sometimes handcuffed by them. Mm-hmm. This practitioner was talking about how she's done a number of guardianships because of poorly signed powers of attorney, which I'll talk about after we talk to Ed in Saratoga. Good morning, Ed. How are you?
Hello.
How's it going, Ed? You're on the radio. What's up?
Fine. Thank you. My question is very simple, I believe. What's the current limits on the when it becomes taxable, your state?
So, I should know this because I
literally
just did it.
Good question. You spoke about this, right?
So, for New York State, it's above $5.4 million for an individual. So, for a married couple that plans well, you could have over almost $11 million. Federally, currently, it's over $11 million. It's $11.4 million is the threshold. And if you're married, we could even combine it to get to $22.8 million. Now, I talked about this for a little while this past week, and the question is, who is the next president, who's the next Senate Majority Leader, who's the next Speaker of the House, and when those things change over time, what happens to that level? Because it kind of shot up relatively quickly. It was just 10 years ago, it was $3.5 million. After President Obama's presidency, it was a little over $5 million, and 2 years ago it shot up double to 11.4, and this idea of portability has been continued. So that's a lot of wealth, which means it's a lot of revenue that the government isn't getting. So the question will be, big picture, what happens to the exemption amounts?
Part of my question, I'm not going to have to worry about that limit.
Well, you never know.
At the same time, all the transactions, no matter the beneficiaries, the trustees, this and that, whatever goes to them, nothing is taxable, correct?
So for the most part, as Jane Marie said a couple calls ago, IRAs are treated, inherited retirements will have some tax issues, but that's because that's how IRAs work. But in terms of all the other assets that pass as a result of a death, if it's subject to tax, whether or not you got $22 million, if it's subject to tax, you're going to get a step up in the tax basis. Now, which means no taxes, number one, and also when they sell the asset, in a lot of instances, there won't be any taxes as well. Now, part of my presentation talked about how a number of different candidates are thinking about doing things to the capital gains rate, rid of the step up in the tax basis, which will mean that more people will probably sell things during their lives and pay taxes during their lives. So it's a moving area. So I got to give you the attorney answer, but yes, is going to be tax-free when they inherit money.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Jimmy, real quick on these powers of attorney. We always talk about powers of attorney, and apparently other attorneys are doing it as well. We don't like other types of attorneys. I don't want your personal injury, your matrimonial attorney. I don't want your real estate attorney doing your power of attorney. I don't want LegalZoom or any other website doing it. The details are really important. You need an estate planning elder law attorney. Some of the powers of attorney that this practitioner came across were done by people who on their websites say they do wills, but they don't do elder law. And so there were, people at the early stages of dementia in their 80s with powers of attorney that don't allow their agent to do Medicaid planning, which is malpractice.
Right. That's okay. Right.
So, or
the gift writer isn't signed, right?
Done correctly. And there was a lot of talk about how the form may change yet again. Mm-hmm. The point is you got to meet with experts when you do these things. They're really, really, really important.
Right. When I speak, I always say a power of attorney is such a long form and it's so complicated. You should have an attorney look it over.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-838-6405.